We begin the current daf Masechta the Shabbos daf Kuf Nun Hey. We begin on the bottom line of Kuf Nun Dal Amud Beis, where the Gemara continues the discussion of the previous daf. That is, a for Isser to be mishtamish with a behema, with an elon, certain things that we're not allowed to use. Then there is a discussion regarding using the side of that object which is forbidden to be used. For example, an animal. That Abaye found Rabbah, the Rabbah was sliding his child on the side of the animal. He says, you're not allowed to use an animal on Shabbos. And then he says, wait a second, that's only on the animal itself, but the side, its tzadin, is permitted to be used. And the Gemara said that it seems to be a machlikas tanoim if tzadin is mutter or asim. And there we had a machlikas amirom regarding this machlikas tanoim or not. Abaye said that the whole machlikas was regarding tzidei tzadin. That is, the side is the same asr as the thing itself. Just like you're not allowed to use the animal, you're not allowed to use the side of the animal. The whole machlikas was regarding the side of the side, and that is something that's touching something which is touching the thing which is forbidden to be utilized. Whereas we had by Rava, Rava said that no, that those who say it's tzadin is asr say also that tzidit tzadin is asr. Those that say tzidit tzadin is mutter, the sides of the side is mutter, will also say that tzadin is mutter. That's where our Gemara begins asking on Rava, that Rava says that there's no difference between the side or the side of the sides. Either way, it's the item itself, Ibn agrees, is forbidden. The question was regarding the sides and the side and the side and the side, whichever one, is that also asr or would that be mutter? And therefore, if you hold that tzidit tzadin is mutter, you would say the same thing for the even for the one tzad, not the direct thing, but something on the side would also be permitted. But if you hold the side as asr, you would hold even tzidit tzadin and so on, that it would also be asr. And that the Gemara begins. Esvei Rav Misharshi L'Rava, you that you said that there's no difference. You didn't say like Abaye that said there's a difference, that they're only arguing by tzidit tzadin. But by tzadin itself, just the side, everyone agrees would be forbidden, and there's a difference. And you say there is no difference, we'll ask you from the following halacha. We learn nuts. If someone sticks in, and we continue on to the top of Kuf Nun Heim and Aleph, yes, it'd be ilan. He sticks in a nail into the tree, the tolabo kakola, and he hangs a basket from that nail, and he puts his eriv in that basket, and his kavana, his intent is to have his mokim shvisa, which is how an Erev works. You, for example, you make Erev Truman, that you want to say, this is my place of residence for Shabbos. So you have to have meals there, which is how the Erev Truman works. And now you have in mind that you're going to have your residence there on the bottom bottom of the tree. So you have your basket of your food hanging from this nail, which is hanging on the tree on Shabbos. So it depends. L'malam me'asar tfachim, if the basket is hanging higher than 10 tfachim from the ground, ain't a ruvi Erev, it's not a good Erev. L'matim yotvachim, if it's lower than 10 tfachim, a ruvi Erev, then it is a good Erev. And that is, if the basket is within 10 tfachim from the ground, it's a good Erev, because then he and his Erev are in the same area of Rosh Hashanah, because the ear space of Rosh Hashanah, of the public domain, goes only up till 10 tfachim. But higher than 10 tfachim is going to be a problem, because generally the basket is is as an area of four. And therefore, the basket itself is going to be Rishus HaYachid because it's higher than 10 Tfachim and it has an area of four squared. And therefore, he is having in mind to have his residence in Rishus HaRam, the public domain. Now, he can't take it from there to eat it because that's in the separate domain. That basket is technically Rishus HaYachid. It's higher than 10 Tfachim high and it's an area of four squared. And since it's not a Suda, it's not a meal, it's fit for him because he can't get to it on Shabbos because, again, he's in Rosh Hashanah and that's Rosh Hashanah and you can't take from one domain to another. Therefore, he cannot acquire his Shvisa, his halachic residence of Shabbos through that area. Therefore, that won't be a good Erev. However, if it's lower than 10 Tfachim, then we said, then it's in the area of Rosh Hashanah, then they're both in the same area, so it's going to be a good Erev. So that is what it says over there. But the Dik, the inference is as follows. Taima denotes yes and be'ilam. The reason why it says over there that one is permitted to do this is if there's a nail that's knocked into the tree. So when he takes his Erev, he's only using what's called tzidei tzadin, the side of the side. That is, he's not touching the tree. He's not even touching the nail that's touching the tree. He's touching the basket that's touching the nail that's touching the tree. That is tzidei tzadin, that's the side of the side that's touching the item that's forbidden to be touched on Shabbos. Haloinoitz, but the inference would be that if he didn't have a nail knocked in, rather he would tie the basket around the tree itself. That would sound like to say that even if the basket would be below 10 tfachim, his Erev would not be an Erev. Now this is the question to Rava. Now, so therefore we see that this Tana says is forbidden if it's just the side. Because he's saying that you have to knock on a nail. Why does he say a nail? Just to tell us that tzidit tzadin is mutter, only because it's the side of the side. But if there was no nail, it would be a problem. Yet for kasher b'tzidit tzadin, and yet he says that it's permitted if it's the side of the side. That is, when there is the tree which is touching the nail, which is touching the basket, then it's permitted. That's not like what you said, Rob. But you said that there is no difference. Either you say that tzidit tzadin is mutter, and then tzadin is also mutter, Or you say tzadin is aser, and the same thing would apply that a tzidit tzadin. Yet here we have a ton that says explicitly that there is a difference, that if it doesn't have the nail, it would be forbidden, even if it's in the same rishos, because you just can't touch it because it's tzadin. Yet tzidit tzadin, that when there's two steps apart from the tree, that it's mutter. And that the Gemara says, Imra Papa, that in truth, that this Tana did not say it's forbidden if it was just tzadin. If it was just its side, it wouldn't be a problem. So then the question arises, why do we have to say, talking about a case of when there's a nail knocked in and then the basket? Why can't the basket be tied around the tree itself? So the Rav Papa says, Hocha bekalkola dechukaskin. Here we're talking about a tightly squeezed basket that has a very narrow opening. And therefore, when he would have to stick his hand in, he would have to push it in to get out the food that's inside of it. And therefore, if the basket itself would be tied around the tree, then you would run into a problem. Then when you would be taking the Erev out of the basket, you wouldn't just be touching the basket and therefore only have tzadin. You'd be moving the tree itself. And therefore, you'd be actually touching and utilizing the tree itself. And therefore, it's only when you have the yesed, when you have the nail that's stuck into the tree, then you have the equivalent of tzadin. Because again, you're really losing one level. Since it's a very tight basket, you're really pushing into the thing that it's touching to. So it's only when you have the nail and the basket, so that the basket's really pushing the nail, it's like you're using the nail, then you're really only having it tzadin. And then that's why it's going to be mutter, because whoever holds tzidit tzadin holds the same thing tzadin, and tzadin is going to be mutter. So tzadin mutter, why couldn't you just have the basket tied around the tree? Because that really wouldn't be tzadin, that would really be touching and moving the tree itself, because it's such a tight basket, you'd be pushing it in and be utilizing the tree itself. However, the Gemara does come to the conclusion that the hilchas of the halacha is not like Rava. Tzadin asurin, the side is forbidden. Tzidit tzadin mutterin, however, the side of the side is permitted like Abaya. There is a difference between the two. And therefore, tzadin is going to be aser. The thing that touching the forbidden item, for example, here the nail would be forbidden to be used on Shabbos, but the basket that's touching the nail, that's touching the tree, that would be permitted. So Amar Vashar Vashar says, Hashad Amrit tzadin asur. Now that you said that using the side of a forbidden item, for example, an animal or a tree, that this thing that's touching it is also aser. So high darga de medallia. So it gives a practical application. It says regarding this ladder that is used to go up to that's the hut of the guards that was, they would make it on top of tall poles, and it was very near to the tree. Lo lintche inish, a person should not rest the top of the ladder adikla on top of the tree. In other words, he shouldn't have the ladder, the top of the ladder, resting on the tree. The havalut doesn't, because that would be the equivalent of the sides of the tree. And therefore, when you're going up the ladder, you'd be utilizing the sides of the tree, and that's forbidden, like we said, stadna aser. Ela linche agabsoi levar medikli. Rather, you should put it on the peg that sticks out of the tree. And that is, they would stick in a peg in the side of the tree, and they would lean the ladder on that peg. So therefore, the peg is the tzadim, is the side, is something touching the tree. And then the ladder would be tzidit tzadim. And therefore, as the Gemara says, v'chisalik, so therefore that would be permitted, because that's tzidit tzadim. However, v'chisalik, when you are going up the ladder, loylinich kari agav ozoi. He shouldn't, you know, when you're going up, you try to have leverage to try to get up. Don't put your foot on that peg that's sticking out of the tree, because again, that would be a problem of tzadim. Ela lisnach akon, and rather put your foot to rest on the rungs, that is on the rungs of the ladder or on the sticks that are coming out of the poles. Either way, it should not be something that's touching the tree itself, or even like the pegs that are touching the tree, because that would be tzadin. Rather, the ladder that's touching the pegs, that's touching the tree, that is mutter, because that is tzidit tzadin. That's two steps away from the forbidden item. Now the Gemara continues to the next Mishnah, talking about preparation of animal food on Shabbos. Our Mishnah begins. Matirin pekiei amir lifnei behemah. You're allowed to untie the bundles of straw that's in front of the animal. And that is, they would have these bundles of straw that would be tied up. You're allowed to untie those bundles that it should be easy for the animal to eat it. And the second case in the Mishnah talks about is that one is allowed to scatter the kippin. And that is because that's what they used to do, that they used to scatter the fodder for the animal. This was the grass that they would eat. It would make it easier for the animal to eat, because when they're tied together, it would get heated. And it wouldn't have its aroma, it wouldn't be able to smell it so much, and therefore it would be disgusted, it wouldn't want to eat its food. So this second case of Hakipin, which the Gemara is going to explain exactly what it is, and similarly the third case of our Mishnah, of Zirin, the Mishnah is going to explain what Kipin and Zirin are. So therefore, the first case, you're allowed to untie the bundles of the straw, and the second case, you're allowed to scatter the Kipin. However, the third case, Avoloyas Azirin, but you're not allowed to do that to the Zirin. And the Gemara is going to explain exactly what Zirin is and what does it mean that what are you not allowed to do for Zirin. Now, Mishnah continues on. Ein Miraskin, you're not allowed to chop down to small pieces. Loyas Ashachas, not this is the stubble of the produce, which is called Aspasta. You're not allowed to cut it up. Avoloyas Acharuvin, and you're not allowed to cut up the carbs. And the reason is since it's an exertion, it's a tircha, that's not necessary. That you're not allowed to do. Lifnei behema for your animal, bein dak or bein gaza, whether it's a small animal or a big animal, since it's unnecessary, that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. Behuda mata becharuv on the dak, however, Behuda says it's permitted with carbs for the small animals, and the reason is because the small animals have very small, thin teeth, and it's hard for them to eat the carbs, and therefore to facilitate the eating of the one's animals regarding the hard, regarding these carbs, they would be permitted to do it. That's the opinion of Behuda. Now the Gemara explains, we found in our Mishnah, as we mentioned, three different cases of pekia, that you're allowed to untie those bundles. Second one was keeping, that you're allowed to scatter them with phosphorus. And the third case was zirin, that you're not allowed to do zirin. It doesn't say exactly what. So we have two mahalchim, two approaches in our Gemara to explain our Mishnah. So the Gemara says the first approach, Amar Rav Huna, hein hein pekia, in the first case of our Mishnah of the bundles, that's the same case as hein hein keeping, as the second case of our Mishnah of the keeping, that they're both talking about bundles of straw. However, the difference is pekiyin tray. The first case of a Mishnah was talking about that it's tied in two places on the two heads, the top and the bottom of the bundle. Keepin t'lasa, the second case of a Mishnah, we're talking about bundles that are tied in three places, the top and the bottom, and in the middle. Zirin, the third case of a Mishnah, is talking about da'arza, it's from a cedar tree. And that is either the moist branches that come out of the cedar tree, that they would be pruned off the tree, and when they were still moist, they're fit to eat for animals. However, the majority of people leave them as firewood for fuel, not to feed it to the animal. And this is what our Mishnah is saying. Matirin piki omer lefnei behem, you're allowed to untie the bundles of straw in front of the animal. That was the first case of the Mishnah. And similarly, umefasvesin, and you're allowed to scatter them. That's the next word of our Mishnah. That's going back on piki omer, on the bundles of straw. And that is the reason is since originally it was food, it was edible food for the animal. Therefore, you're allowed to go ahead and exert yourself to prepare it and make it better for the animal, which is to go ahead and scatter, make it more edible and more palpable for the animal. But who had din lekeepin? Then the Mishnah says the keepin says that the same thing would apply to untie and to scatter for the keepin, that there it's also permitted to open it up and scatter it, even though there it's more of an effort because there it's tied in three places. Still, that's the same thing that both a bundle of straw is permitted. A third case of the Mishnah said, Avoloyas Azirin, but not the Zirin, which are the moist branches that were pruned off from the cedar tree. There it's not permitted, Loy Lefasvis V'Loy Lahata, not to scatter those branches and not even to untie that type of a bundle. And the reason is, since generally these type of branches are not meant for food, even for animals, they're meant for firewood, so therefore now when he's untying it, he's creating it into an eichel, into edible item. That's what's called being moilid uchle b'shabbos. It's like creating a new entity of that was not a food till now, because when it was tied, it was generally being constricted for fuel, and now when you're untying it and you're putting it in front of the animal, you're creating it into a food item. That's forbidden on Shabbos, so whether to untie it or to scatter, it's forbidden. So I'm Rav Chizda says, my time in Rav Huna, what's the understanding of this opinion of Rav Huna in his interpretation of the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, Kasava lemitrach beuchlo, he says, because regarding exerting oneself, regarding a food item, in other words, something that was originally a food item, before this tikkun, before this, what are you doing to make it better? Tarchinan, you're allowed to toil yourself and make it better than what it was before. And l'shavi uchlo lemashavinan, however, to create a new food item, that's forbidden. And therefore, there's the isra of zirin, whether to untie it or to scatter it. But whereas what we find by the bekiya amr, the bundle of straw, and the keeping, which is also a bundle of straw, just tied in three places, then you're allowed to go through the effort of untying it and scattering it, because once it's a food item, all you're doing is making it better, that's permitted. But to create a new food item, like the zirin, that's forbidden. That's the first interpretation of the Gemara. Second interpretation is Rabbi Huda amr. Rabbi Huda says, Hein hein pekiyin, hein hein zirin. He says that the first and the third case of the Mishnah are both the same case, not the first and the second. Says that they're both talking about that they're straws, that they're piles of straw. And what was permitted by pekiya amr is permitted by zirin. Now, yet it says that this third case of the zirin, it says avaloy hazirin, says to the contrary, how could he say it's the same thing? It says, but you cannot do that for the zirin. That's not going on the untying, that's going on the pispus, on the scattering, as the Gemara explains. The really Pekin and Zirin are the same thing. But Pekin Trey, as similar as the first Mandam said we're going to keep in, he says regarding Zirin that Pekin is tied in two places. Zirin Telasa, the Zirin, which is also a pile of straw, is that is tied in three places. And keep in the middle case is the Arzi, are this moist branches of the cedar tree. V'hachakam, and this is what the Mishnah is saying. Matirin Peki Amar Lefnei Behem, you're allowed to untie the bundles of straw in front of the animal. And that is that as long as it's tied, it's not a food item. And therefore, you're allowed to untie it to create it into a food item. And the reason is because since the tsar for the behemoth, the animal is pain, that's why it's going to be mutter. Because although that bundles of straw is always permitted, but once it's when it's tied, it's not really fit for the animal to eat it. And therefore, now you're creating it into a food item when you're untying it. Alva pispuse loy. But this is Rabbi Huda's interpretation. He learns that regarding the bundles of straw, that we never permitted you to go ahead and scatter it. Because it's enough just to untie it to make it edible and fit for the animal to eat it. And to go ahead and scatter it would only be an extra level of pleasure for the animal, to make it more convenient, more palatable, to make it more geschmack. And therefore, to go ahead and exert oneself with something which is already an edible thing, without what you're going to have to go and do it, which in this case would be to scatter it, that you're not going to go through that exertion and that effort, because that's not necessary. So therefore, Piki Amer was only muted to untie, as it says. V'kipin pispusin nami misfas vasvinin. However, regarding the second case of a Mishnah, which is keeping, which we're interpreting means to say, according to Yehuda, that's going in the moist branches of the cedar tree, that is mutter even to go ahead and scatter it. Because regarding scattering the moist branches of the cedar tree, without scattering it, it's not an edible food item. Because it's necessary for it to be scattered, for it to be fit for the animal to eat it, and that's why that's permitted. And then that's what the third case of the Mishnah came to say. However, the zirin, which again we're saying is the equivalent as the first case of Pekiya Omar, that they're both talking about bundles of straw, it's just that zirin is talking about is tied in three places, there it's permitted, it's not permitted to go out and scatter it, it's only permitted to untie it, as we said regarding Pekiya Omar, that because it's you're allowed to untie the three places where it's tied, because that's going to head and create it into a food item that's fit to be eaten. But to go ahead and scatter it, which is just timing ba'ama, extra level, that would be forbidden. On that, the Gemara says, Amar Rav, my time with Rabbi Huda, what's the understanding of his opinion? He holds the reverse of Rav Huna. Ksavar shavi uchla mishavinan. To go ahead and make a food item, that's permitted because that's necessary. Without that, there would be tsar balachayim. It wouldn't have food to be eaten. So that's permitted. Mitrach b'uchla lo tachin, but to go ahead and exert oneself with something which is already fit to be eaten, just to make it a tiny ba'alma, to make it a little bit more geschmack, a little bit more pleasurable for the animal, that would be forbidden. And therefore, again, the first and the third case, which Rabbi Huda is interpreting as bundles of straw, there it's permitted to go ahead and open it. Because if it's not open, it's not really a food item yet. Even though it's straw, it's always eaten for the animal, but it's tied, it can't get to it. So therefore, you're allowed to open it, but you're not allowed to scatter it because that's just tainig ba'alma. Regarding the middle case, which he's interpreting as the case of the moist branches of the cedar tree, where there, even if you don't scatter it, it's still not really fit for the animal. There, not only are you allowed to open it, you're allowed to even scatter it because that's, again, what makes it into a food item that it can be eaten, which that's the only case that it is permitted. Whereas by the case of Tircha, that it's already an eichel, there's no reason why we would allow it. Exactly the opposite of Huna, who said that Tircha you're allowed to because it's a food item, it's not really doing that much more. Whereas to go ahead and make it a food item, that's a problem. You can't create a food item on Shabbos. So now the Gemara gives two questions on Rav Huna's opinion, and then it will ask two questions on Rabbi Huda's opinion. The Gemara says, Tanah, we learned the Mishnah, which is our Mishnah, a question that seems to be on Rav Huna. We learned, Ein meraskin sashachas v'secharuben, that one is not allowed to go ahead and chop up the stubble, which are the small little parts of when the plant is still small, and the caribs, you're not allowed to cut it up, lefnei behem, in front of an animal, bein dako bein gaso, whether it's a small animal or it's a large animal. Now, my love, charuben domi de shachas. It seems to be equating the carob with the shachas, which is the stubble, the small little growth of the plant before it gets big. Now, ma shachas derakichi, just like shachas, obviously it's very soft. This is when it's still little stubble. Av charuben derakichi, obviously the carobs are talking about that it's also soft. And for example, you have soft carobs, which are fit for the animals to eat even without chopping it up. Now, obviously, chopping it up would just be what's considered timing biyama, just making it more gishmak, more palatable for the animal to eat. Now, obviously, we see that one does not go through an exertion for something that's already a food item, even though it would make it better for the animal if it was cut up into small pieces, because here we see that you're not allowed to chop it up. not the carobs, not the shachas, and carobs are just like shachas in that they're soft. Now we see that because since it's not hard, it is edible. It just would make it better if it was cut up, that's usher. That seems to be not like Rav Huna, who said that to the contrary, that to be matriach and something that's a food item is permitted, and it's only to make it into food item that's forbidden. But to you after Rav Huna, it seems to contradict the opinion of Rav Huna. So I'm like Rav Huna loyt. Shachas to midacharuba, to the contrary. It's not that we're comparing the carobs to the shachas to say just like shachas is soft, so to other carobs. It is the shachas compared to the carobs, and the macharuba nakushi, just like the carobs, are hard, for example, when they dry up, of shachas nakushi, so too the stubble is talking about that it got hard. So the Gemara is hachemishkach, so where do you find that stubble is going to be hard, that it's not edible for the animal, and therefore it's going to be forbidden because it's creating a new food item, but not that it's making it just more convenient. Stubble is always so soft. What type of an animal would it be that it's so hard that it's inedible and therefore it's forbidden to chop it up? Now the Gemara says, Be'ilei Zutri, we're talking about by young donkeys, that even hard shachas would be hard for them, and therefore you would need to go ahead and crush it to make it edible for it to be eaten. That's why it's us, like Rav Huna, who says that to create a new food item is forbidden. It's only if it was already edible and just making a little bit more better, only then is it going to be mutter. And here the case of the shachas and charuvin, it would have to be creating it into a new food item for it to be permitted, and that's us to do on Shabbos. A second question, Rav Huna, Toshima, we learned from, also from our Mishnah, that Rabbi Huda matabah charuvin ladakar. Rabbi Huda argued, and he says, it's permitted to go ahead and chop up the carbs for a small animal on Shabbos. So the inference is, ladakar in for a small animal, yes, that you lot do, because that's creating it into a food item. Lagasaloi, but for a big animal, that would be forbidden, because that's what's considered matriach ba'uchal. That would be giving an exertion for an effort for something that's already a food item anyway, because a big animal could eat it, even without it being chopped up. Now, the question is as follows. Now, if you're going to say that the Tanakama helped, that to go ahead and exert oneself with something that's already a food item, that's forbidden to be done because it's already edible, you're just making it a little bit better. However, shav mishavinam, but that you would be able to go ahead and create a new food item. That is, if you say that Rabbi Huda heard the Tanakama saying that you could go ahead and go through the effort by a food item, that would be forbidden to go through an effort if it's already a food item. And this that we said that you're not allowed to chop it up is told by a soft one, right? Because by a soft one, it's already edible to eat. That's why you can't chop it up. But to create a food item, that would be permitted if that's the way the version was. So, and that would be like Rabbi Huda, not like Rav Huna. So, Haina Dukam, Rabbi Huda, that would be understandable why Rabbi Huda tells the Tanakama, Hacharuvin Ladaka, Nami Shavi Ochlehu. That no, that's why the carrots for the small animal should be permitted. Because that's also creating into a food item that Rabbi Huda is saying that the carbs for the small animal should not be forbidden because it's creating it into a food item for that small animal. And even though it's soft, it doesn't make a difference because the small animal can't eat it even if it's soft. So that would make sense according to Rabbi Huda. But however, if you're going to say like Rav Huna, that the Tanakhama holds that to create a food item, that's forbidden. Mitrach bu'uchle metachin. However, to go ahead and exert yourself for something that's already a food item, that you're allowed to do, and that when he says ve'in miraskin, that it says that you're not allowed to go ahead and chop it up, that was told by hard things, as we just interpreted for Rav Huna just before in the Tanakhama's opinion, that would go ahead and make it, requiring it to create into a new food item, which according to Rav Huna is a problem. But then we're stuck with a question, Rabbi Yehuda, who's arguing on that opinion of Tanakhama, demata becharuvin ladaka? He says that it's permitted to go ahead and chop up the carbs for the small animal. Does that make sense? Kol shekein lagasa, to the contrary, all the more so for a big animal, where that for sure would be included in just the effort of something that's already considered a food item from before and should be permitted. And therefore, it should have said as follows. That Yehuda says it's permitted by the carbs for the big animal. Because for the big animal, it's already for sure considered a fit food item, even if it's hard, and it's just going to go ahead and it's just a tirchen, something that's a food item. And Rashi says you can't say that Yehuda is saying the opposite of Tanakhama, and that creating it into a food item is permitted. However, to go ahead and be matriach in something that's a food item is forbidden, because the Tanakhama, as we just mentioned before in the opinion of Rav Huna, is talking about by hard, when they're hard, that we said we're comparing the shachas to the charuvin, that just like the charuvin, the carbs are hard, so too the shachas are hard. And by a large animal, that would be considered, even by a large animal, that would be considered creating a new food item. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda should have said as follows. Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutter. And he shouldn't have said anything that would apply both by a small animal and by a big animal, because for sure by a small animal, if it's considered just matriach oichel, for sure by a big animal, because a big animal could eat much more than the small animal could eat. And therefore, if we're coming to say that it's only that matriach that you could do, and not l'shavi uchla, so then we should have said that by the matriach uchla, by the big animal for sure, just like the small animal. And even more so, if this was Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, not like the Tanakama, then he should have said it permitted even Zirin to untie it and to scatter it, because that's also considered equating it into a food. Now, if Rabbi Yehuda was arguing on the fundamental principle of Tanakama, and that's why it shouldn't be difficult on Rav Huna, then he should have said also Zirin is Mutter, because Shavi Ochel is Mutter. Obviously, he doesn't argue on Tanakama. All he's saying is that according to what you're saying, not only should it be permitted to go ahead and be Meshavi Ochel of what you're saying, it should be even permitted for the small animal to do it even when it's soft, because a small animal can't eat it even when it's soft, because it's too much for the animal when it's carbs. And again, that seems to be difficult according to the opinion of Rav Huna, again, that he says that it's only going to be permitted when it is a oichel already, and you're just doing an extra effort. Whereas when it's creating a food item that's forbidden, Rabbi Yehuda shouldn't have said then that it's permitted by the small animal. Rather, the contrary, should have said plain, or at least said by the large animal, where there for sure it's going to just be matriach ba'uchla, whereas by the small animal, you could say on some level, it's going to be shavi uchla, which is the opposite of Rav Huna's opinion. And that the Gemara says, Misa ver daka daka mamash, do you think when it says that Rabbi Yehuda says it's permitted for the small animal, it means just a small animal? My daka gasa, when it says the small animal, when it says daka, it really means a large animal. Now, what does that mean? My kari la daka, so why is it called a daka? The daika ba'uchla, that it makes its food very small, that it chews well. And because it's chewing, it makes the food very small in its mouth. And that's why it says that it's muteris bedaka. It means the large animal, because for the large animal, it's going to be just being matriach ba'uchla. And that's why it tells the Tana Nekama that's why it's going to be mutter. But that the Gemara asked, but how many tani reisha bein daka bein gasa? But from the reisha, when you see that it says that whether the small animal or whether the large animal, obviously it means literally the small animal and the large animal, because if daka means a large animal, how can it be bein daka bein gasa if gasa means a large animal? And now Rabbi Yehuda is going on the Tanakama. So machlad Rabbi Yehuda daka mamish comes. Obviously, when Rabbi Yehuda used the same terminology of daka, he means a small animal, not a large animal, that a large animal will be madaka in its food, that make its food small. It can't be, because then that's the equivalent of gasa in the reisha. So the Gemara says, Kasha, that seems to be a question. It's not a teyufta, but it definitely seems to be problematic that if Hakar Rabbi Yehuda mean to say with daka that it means it's a large animal, but it makes its food daka, when he definitely seems to be using the same terminology as the Tanakama, when he says, bein daka, bein gasa, and if daka means gasa, then what does gasa mean? Gasa means a large animal. So that seems to be a question on Rav Huna. Now the Gemara tries to bring two questions against Rav Yehuda. Toshima. We learned in the Mishnah later on that says, Mechatchen, one could cut, we continue on to Amud Beis, Es Hadluin, the guards, that those which are already detached from the ground, Lefnei HaBehem, in front of his animal. And we don't say that it's considered Muktzah for animal, because it's really fit for human food, and human food is not designated for animals. We don't say that. We say that you're allowed to even chop it up for the animal. It's not considered Muktzah for the animal. Based on the veil of Neklov, you could cut up a carcass, a dead animal, and for the dogs. Now, the inference is that we compare the two cases to Dluin and Nevela. My love, Dluin, Dum, Nevela. It sounds like we're comparing the guards to the carcass. The man Nevela, Der Kicha, just like by the carcass, it's soft. Av Dluin, Der Kicha. So the Dluin are soft. Alma Trachin, Nebuchle. Obviously, you see that you're allowed to be Matriach in a food item, but you have to have Yehuda. Because here we're talking about something that's soft already, and it's edible for the animal to eat. And yet, still we're allowed to go ahead and chop it up just to make it a little bit better. Now, that's not like Rabbi Yehuda, who says that if it's already edible, you can't go ahead and make it better. You can only make it into a food item that wasn't fit beforehand. Yet here, the Dluyin we let, even though the Chayr is soft, because we're comparing it, we're equating it to the Nevela, which is also soft. So, like Rabbi Yehuda, Allah. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, to the contrary. Nevela, Dumi, Dluyin, we're equating the carcass to the Dluyin. And my Dluyin, Dashunni, just like the Dluyin are hard, Af Nevela, Dashunni, here also talking about a carcass that's hard, and we're comparing it in reverse. So the Gemara says, where do you find such a thing that a carcass is hard, that it wouldn't be edible for the animal to be eating it? So the Gemara has two approaches. Either that babasa pili, that it's elephant meat, and therefore that's very hard meat that really would be challenging for the animal, therefore we have to cut it up to make it edible for the dogs. Inami, or also, that it's not really the meat that's the problem, that it's hard. Rather, it's a certain type of dogs that we're talking about. We're talking about beguyasa zuchi, we're talking about small puppies. And that is, for them, every carcass is hard for them. And that's why we're equating the nevela to the other case of Dudluin to say, just like there it's hard, here it's also hard, that it's only because it's to Lashavi Uchli that it's permitted to chop it up. Because or else it wouldn't be fit for it at all, it wouldn't be considered Oichel. That Rabbi Yehuda says is permitted. However, if it was already fit, and it's just to make it a little bit better, that to the contrary, that would be Aser, because Tirchu Lo Mitrachinan, if it's Oichel already, we don't go through that extra effort. The second question on Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara says, Toshima, we learned, the Tani Rav Chonim Nardo, Mifrachinon Tevin Vas Pasto, we're allowed to crumble straw and stubble, Uma Arvin, and you can mix them up, that is, you mix up the straw and the stubble together, that the animal eats the straw because of the aspasta, the stubble that's mixed into it. So that's what it says in the Braisa. So Alma, Tachina Beuchlis. You see, you can go through the extra effort by something that's a fit item. In other words, you can go through these efforts for that, although the straw is and the stubble are fit, you can go ahead and mix them together. You can go through these efforts that seem to be needless in the sense of creating it into a food item. It's just to make it more palatable, more geschmack for the animal. Yet that seems to be not like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says that no, both the case of the tevin and the spasta are creating it into a food item. If not for what we're doing, it wouldn't be edible, it wouldn't be an oichel in the first place. Because tevin, the straw that we're talking about, is betiv nesar. You were talking about spoiled straw. And that is that it's not fit, and therefore it's only what we're doing that we're going ahead and we're crumbling it and mixing it together that makes it edible in the first place. However, it's not totally spoiled, because if it was totally spoiled, Rashi says, then it would be designated just for making cement out of it, and therefore it would be forbidden to be moved. It would be totally muktza. It means it's not as great as it usually is, and therefore the animal wouldn't eat it, and therefore what we're doing is creating into oichel. Similarly, as pasta, regarding the stubble, we're talking about be'ili zutru, with small donkeys again, that if we didn't crumple it, it would be too hard for them to eat, and therefore really both of the cases are mashvi uchla, creating into a food item, and therefore that's miyashav Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that it's only they were its mutter, but you're right, if it was already edible, if it was regular straw and regular stubble, then we would not be allowed to crumble it, because that would be tircha to be matriach in the eichla, and that's forbidden according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore those are the two opinions that we had in our Gemara of Rav Huna and Rabbi Yehuda, that seems to be opposite ends of the spectrum. Is it only that you're allowed to go ahead and create into a food? However, if it's already a food, you're not going through the effort. Or it's to the exact opposite. You're only allowed to go through the effort if it's already a food, but to create it into food, that would be a problem. That is the machlokes. Now we continue with the next Mishnah. Continuing on this theme of Michael Behema regarding food items for animals on Shabbos. So our Mishnah begins. Ein oivzin es agomel. One is not allowed to stuff a camel on Shabbos, that is to feed it so much against its will, and they would stuff it into its throat. The Gemara explains this terminology of oivsin comes from to make the stomach of the camel like an ovus, like a trough, which is where the food of the is always stored, where they eat it from. That's what it means oivsin, like as if you're making him into an ovus, into a trough. Beloy darsin, similarly, you're not allowed to push the food into the throat, push the barley down into the camel. However, that's not as much as oivsin, still yet that's going to be also in Shabbos. Aval malitin, but you're allowed to pour into the camel. The Gemara doesn't explain exactly what this is. The ein mamirin es agolam. One's not allowed to fatten up the calves. And the Gemara doesn't explain exactly what is mamirin. Aval malitin, but you are allowed to pour into the calf on Shabbos. Umahalkitin latar on the ground. And the Gemara is going to explain exactly what it is, but you're allowed to be mahalkit into the chicken. The neistin mayim lamursin, and for the chicken's food, you're allowed to put the water into the bran, avaloi gevelin, but you're not allowed to knead it. That's an isser of Lashon Shabbos. Then the Mishnah continues, you're not allowed to put even water in front of the bees, or in front of the doves in the dovecotes. And the Gemara is going to explain either one of two reasons. Either because it's not incumbent upon you to feed them, because they go out and they find their food into the fields, and therefore that's an effort that's not permitted. Or because the water in the swamps, in the rivers, are commonly found for these animals, and therefore what you're doing again is unnecessary, and therefore that's forbidden. Aval, however, the Mishnah does say that nisn lifnei avos nevetanegelim, you are allowed to put in front of the geese and the chicken, v'lifnei yoini hardisois, and the front of the Herodian pigeons, that's on the name of the place where they come from, that's the yoini hardisois, and since these animals, they get their food from inside the house, and therefore it is incumbent upon you, and they don't get it elsewhere, there, for those animals, you're allowed to go ahead and feed them on Shabbos. Now the Gemara goes back to explain our Mishnah. My ain oivsin. What does it mean when we said you're not be oivsin as a gomel, you're not stuff the camel on Shabbos? What does that mean? Rabbi Yehuda, ain oivsin lo ovis b'teich me'er. You're not allowed to make the stomach of the camel into a trough, meaning to get stuff all the food down in there. So the Gemara asks, Mika Hai Gavne, is there really such a case? In other words, to feed the camel so much that you're going to widen it so much, like as if it's a trough inside? The Gemara says, "In yes, you can stuff a camel that much." He said, "L'didi chazi le'ahutai." I once saw this Arab merchant, the ochle kura, that he gave his camel to eat a kur of food, vatin the kura, and then he loaded it up with a kura on top of its back for food for the road, besides all the other packages it was carrying. You see how much food you could stuff into a camel. Our Mishnah continued, "In my mirin," that one is not allowed to go ahead and stuff and fatten the calves, not go. So the Gemara asked, on the one hand, we said Hamra is Asr, but Halata is Mutter. So the Gemara asks, Ezi Hamra, what is Hamra that's forbidden? Ezi Halata, and what is Halata that's Mutter? I'm Rabbi Huda. So Rabbi Huda's opinion is, Hamra is Lamakim She'in Yechoy L'Hachzer. This that Hamra is forbidden, it means to put it in such a place far down the throat of the calf that it's the point of no return, that it can't bring it back up, that you stuck it in past what's called the Beis Habli, the place where it swallows. That's forbidden. Halata, that is lamokim sheichoy lahach. That's the place where it could still bring it back up. That is permitted to do to the animal on Shabbos. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Chizda argues, and he says, "Idvi idi lamokim she'ein yechoy lahach." No, both of them are talking about a place of no return where it can't bring it back up. So why is one mutter, one aser? V'hamra, the one that's aser is bekli when you do it with a utensil. That's with a spoon. Halata biyad, the halata that's permitted, although it's going so far down that it can't bring it back up, is with one's hand, and that's mutter on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbi Yosef asked to the opinion of Yehuda that the difference between the two are if it goes to a point of no return. That if it goes so far down, then it's aser. If you didn't do that far down, it's mutter. He asked from the following brisa. Mahal ketin latan legoylem, one is allowed to force feed his chicken. Vein tzarach le mishamalakidna. And you have to say that you're allowed to gather it and just to feed the chickens. However, you're not allowed to even feed the doves in the dovecotes and the doves in the attic. You don't have to say that you're not allowed to force feed them because you can't even feed them regularly. Now, the Gemara asks, what are these two cases of mahalkitin and malkitin that we said regarding the doves, that there you can't do either one of them? But regarding the chickens, you could do both of them. You could even force feed it and you could be machil in it. So, ilay mahalkatin, if you say that the case of mahalkatin means the suffer libya dime, that you force feed it with your hands, and there is where we're saying it's going to be us, that you stuffed it down its mouth. And malkitin, what would it mean that you're allowed to feed it by the chickens, but what you can't do by the doves is the shadili kamayo? That means that you just put it in front of the animal, you give it to feed by just putting it there it's mutter. But that would infer, that Mishta Kamai Nami Loi, that for the doves in the dovecotes and the doves in the attic, there you can't even put the food in front of them. Now, why wouldn't you be able to? What type of tirch is that just laying it out over there that they could eat it? You're telling me that Mahalkitin is stuffing it down with one's hand, and Malkitin is just putting it in front of it. Now, if that would be the cases that are both mutter by the chickens, why would they be both be usher by the doves? Why can't you put food in front of it? That's not a tirch that should be usher. So, Elulav, rather, we must say that Mahalkitin means that when you're force feeding, that's lamakim she'ein yechoy lahachzer. That's the place where it can't bring it back up anymore. And malkitin means lamakim she'ein lahachzer. They're both talking about not that you just put it in front of it. It means that you stuffed it in its mouth. Because or else, if it's just putting it in front, it shouldn't be usher even by the doves of the dovecotes and the doves of the attic. And now therefore, since we just explained that according to the interpretation that we must say in this brisa, that mahalkitin means to say that which is the case in our mission that's mentioned also, that means you forced it down in the throat of the chicken, the place where it can't even bring it back up anymore, and still it's going to be mutter. So obviously when it says in our Mishnah, mal'itin of the calves and the camels are also talking about a place that can't bring it back up, and still it's going to be mutter, because there's not going to be any difference between the chicken or the calves or the camel. And rather, just by an animal, it's called halata, and by birds, it's called hilkut. And because what's the difference? We see that if you're forcing it down to a place where it can't come back up, it's mutter by chickens, it's going to be mutter by all the other cases. Now, therefore, mechlal must be inferred, the hamrob, that the case of a mishnah that is aser by the calves, what type of case would that be aser? If we find by a chicken, even forcing it so far down that it can't bring it back up, it's going to be mutter. Same thing should apply, that should be considered halata of the calves and by the camel. So what is hamrob that is aser? Obviously, be kli, that's talking about with a vessel, with a spoon, But to Yivtu Rabbi Huda, that's obviously a contradiction of Rabbi Huda's opinion, that he said that, no, that's not dependent if there's a vessel or not. He said it depends if it can bring it back up or not, yet it seems to be contradicted from this brisa that we see that just being far past the place where it could bring it back up is not a reason to say that it's aser. To the contrary, that is mutter, as we find, that must be that's what the case of the chickens are talking about, that one's talking about stuffed it down till where it could still bring it back up, and the other one's talking about that it cannot bring it back up anymore, and both are mutter, and therefore the cases of our Mishnah that are mutter of halata are talking about that it, even though it went past the place where it can bring it back up, but it was only with one's hand. And the case that it's aser is talking about because it's a vessel. That's like the other opinion, not like Rabbi Huda's opinion. Because again, that the case of Malkitin and Mahalkitin have to be talking about that you put it into the chicken's mouth, one just being that it could still bring it back up, one not, because if you put it in front, then regarding the cases of the doves, that should be mutter because that's not a tircha. Another Gemara says, Omlach Rabbi Huda, no. La'olam mahalkitin. In truth, the case of mahalkitin is desafilei b'yadayim, that you stuffed it into the chicken's mouth with one's hands to a place where it could still bring it back up. And malkitin are just deshadli kamay, you just threw it in front of the animal, and therefore you have no proof from there to say that we find that you allow to stuff an animal even to a place where it cannot bring it up, and that it must be the case that it's usher is only when you did it with a kli, with a vessel. Because not true. There that we find by a chicken that brisa is only to a place where it could still bring it back up. And the other case was talking about that you didn't even put it in its mouth, you just put it in front. Yet with the kokashilach, but then the question that you had was that yoini shuvich v'yoini aliyah. Regarding the doves of the dovecotes and of the attic, lemishti kamay nami loy, that why can't you throw it in front of them? What's the problem? That's not a tircha. And that Rabbi Huda says that even throwing it just in front of the animal is a problem. And the reason is because hanim is a nois nalecha, that these chickens, their food is incumbent upon you, you have to feed them. And therefore, that's mutter, again, even to stuff it into their throat, again, where it could still bring it back up. But regarding these doves, their food is not incumbent upon you. And that's because they can find their food even in the desert. And therefore, you're not allowed to even put it in front of them, even that small little minuscule effort, even that's not permitted to do. Could you tell like a brisa? One is allowed to put food in front of a dog. You cannot even put food in front of a swine in front of a chazer. And that is, we see the same idea, the same concept. We're just saying, even just putting in front is a tircha, which is aser, if it's not incumbent upon you to feed. To which the Braisa says, the mahefresh bin zel hazeh, what is the difference between the dog and the chazer? And that the Braisa says, zem is a nois of alecha, that the dog, his food is incumbent upon you to feed him. Mezeh ein is a nois of alecha, but regarding the chazer, the swine, his responsibility to feed is not on you. And that is because the Jew is cursed if he raises swine, if he raises chazerim, and therefore, since he's not allowed to even have them, for sure it's not a coming upon him to feed him, that's why he can't even go as much as to even put the food in front of the chazer, whereas by a kelev, he's allowed to, which is similar to the case of the chickens, where again, mahalkitin and malkitin are talking about at least that it's less to be able to be brought up, because Rabbi Huda's opinion is, if it went, you cannot do it, as far as it won't be able to bring it back up, even not with a kli, even with one's yad. So the Gemara says, Amr Avashi, Masitin Namideka, our Mishnah also seems to indicate this idea that even throwing in front of the doves is also forbidden. Because we learned, Ein nois nemaim lefnei devarim, for the fnei yonim shebeshuvach. And I'll put water not in front of the bees, and not in front of the doves from the dovecote. Aval nois lefnei avaznam lefnei atanagun lefnei yonim hadrisais. But you are allowed to put in front of the geese, in front of the chicken, and in front of the Herodian doves. Now, my time, what's the reason? Lav mishum dahanim b'zaynos nalecha. Isn't it because that those animals, those last three, are incumbent upon you? They get food only from the house. Whereas the other ones, the bahani and the doves, ain't b'zaynos nalecha. There, the food is not upon you, and therefore it's forbidden even to just put it in front of them. Which is what we said that the other ones you're allowed to put in front of them. Now the Gemara asked, but l'taimeich, according to this raya you're trying to bring from the Mishnah, my ir yumaya, why do we say just a case of water is forbidden to put in front of the doves? Even wheat and barley should also be forbidden. Ella, rather, the Gemara says, is not a raya from a Mishnah, because shani maya, water is different. That we said you're not allowed to put in front of the doves, because the water is different, the shchichi ba'agmo, because that can be found in the ponds. However, maybe food, which is not so common, maybe that would be permitted to put in front of the doves from the dovecote and the doves from the attic. And there, but that's not a raya. Maybe that would be permitted, and not like what we're trying to prove, that Rabbi Huda holds that you now they even put in front of the doves just barley and wheat, what is necessary for its food, and maybe it's only water that would be forbidden, because that's very commonly found. Now the Gemara continues on what we mentioned, regarding the discrepancy regarding the dog and the chazer, that the dog, it's incumbent upon you to feed, whereas and therefore you're allowed to do it on Shabbos, but the Chazer, it's not a common upon you, not a lot of feed. Darsh Reb Yoina, a pischa de Beinus, Reb Yoina lectured by the opening of the Nasi's house. He said, what does it mean in the Pasuk in Mishlei? Yideat Tzadik Din Dalam, that the righteous knows the judgment of the poor. So that's a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the Tzadik. Yideat HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bekelev, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows regarding the dog, Shem Mezeinoisa Mu'atan, that its food is very little. And that is, he knows regarding the dog that people don't have mercy on the dog to give the dog a lot of food. That's why he lets the food sit in the dog's stomach that it shouldn't be hungry for 3 days. Like we learned in the Mishnah Alis that proves this point. And that talks about by a dog that ate the flesh of a corpse. And the corpse, and then the dog that has the corpse inside of it, the dog dies in the house. And now that's always regarding the tumah of oil, that if there's a human corpse, a part of the body that's in the oil, the whole oil becomes tummy. So the Mishnah there explains, Kama tisha achilasa b'meya b'hei tummy. How long can the corpse stay in the stomach of the dog and still convey tumah of tumah's mess? So the Mishnah said, Bekelev gimel yom be'es le'es. Regarding a dog, it's up to 3 days of 24-hour periods. That is, within 3 days, the corpse will convey tumah and tumah's oil because it's still there. It's not totally decomposed. That's why we said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps the food of the dog in his stomach up to 3 days. And therefore, the corpse that's in him is still there. It's not totally decomposed. It wasn't totally digested. Therefore, it will convey tumah up to, if the dog ate it, within 3 days. However, when the dog is alive, then although the human corpse is inside of his stomach, it will not convey tumah because what's called tumah blua, which is swallowed tumah by a living thing, that's not metame, as the Gemara in Behema Makasha explains in Masechet Chulin Daf Ayin Aleph, that won't apply to the dog that has the human corpse inside of it when he's alive. When the dog dies, then it doesn't separate it, and therefore the human corpse, if it's within 3 days of when it died, then it didn't totally decompose in the dog's stomach, and therefore it's going to be, it will convey the tumah. That's the same idea that we said. However, regarding birds and fish, then the human corpse will only convey tumah the amount of time that it would take if it fell into a fire for it to be burned, because they have very quick digestive systems. And therefore, that's like very quick. The amount of time it takes to put in a fire and it's burnt, that's a very small amount of time. Past that, it won't convey the tumah. Even if the bird dies or the fish dies and it's there in the oil, it will not convey the tumah. So Amar Rav Huna says, Shema Mino, from this we could infer that from the fact that it said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very particular about the food of the dog, it has rachmanis on the dog, because it knows it's not getting from people, and therefore it lets it stay for 3 days in its stomach. From here we learn that it would make sense, it would be derech eretz to throw a raw piece of meat to the dog. V'kam, and how much food is that? And then since we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about the dog, we should also throw the dog its bone, like they say. So how much? Amar Rav Mori, Meshach Udne, the measurement of its ear, like a little bit, not so much meat. But V'chutra Abasrei, and you have the stick ready after the dog, that is, you should hit the dog right away, that it shouldn't come to you and start attaching himself to you. So you should give it a little bit, but quickly hit it to stay away from you. And that's only Hanamili B'Dav, that's only in the desert. Meaning in the field, far out, not in the city. Av B'Masaleh, but in the city, you shouldn't give him anything. And that is because, unless if it's your own dog. And the reason is, the Asla Misach is going to come to chase after you, and you're going to lose out a lot of money because you're going to constantly have to be giving the dog. So in the city, don't give the dog anything. So summarizing this whole idea, the Gemara says, Amar Papa, less to Anya Mekaba. There's no animal poorer than a dog. As we said, it doesn't get any food. It has to keep it up to 3 days. But less to Ati Mechazir, and there's no animal wealthier than the swine, because everything is fit to be eaten for the swine. It eats anything, no matter how dirty it is, and it finds food. And also, people tend to give the swine, the chazer, a lot of food to eat. So therefore, it's like this discrepancy we said between the dogs and the chazer, that the dog, there's no poorer animal, and there's no richer, wealthier animal than the chazer. Now the Gemara goes back to the topic that we mentioned before regarding the topic of our Mishnah. Tanya Kavosed Rabbi Yehuda, we learned the brisa that seems to indicate, like Rabbi Yehuda, that Hamra, that this stuffing of the calf, that's usher, it means to a place where it can't return. And not because it's because of a kli that it's necessarily with a utensil like a spoon. Rather, the criteria is that if you put it to a place where it can't bring it back anymore, that's what's going to be usher, and that's the case of Amra. Where do we find this? Because we said, Ezihi Amra ve'ezihi halata. The Bryce says, what is Amra that's usher? What's halata that's mutter? Hamra is marbitza, you lay down the animal, upaikis espia, and you prop open its mouth, that you put a stick or something in its mouth that it won't be able to close it. Umachili karshin nemayim basachas, and then you feed it vetch and water together at the same time. That's because the water absorbs the vetch into the stomach, into the throat, forcibly against the animal. That is going to be hamra, which is aser. Halata is machilim umin umashkim umin, as you feed and you drink the animal while it's still standing. Where then, when you put it into its mouth, as long as you didn't lay it down, you can't force it in so much that it won't be able to bring it back. It still will be able to bring it back. When noisim kashin mifin the asman, mifin the asman, you put in vetch separately and water separately, that the animal could still bring back up. And therefore, that is exactly like Rabbi Yehuda, that's the difference. Hamra is aser because you put it so far down that it can't bring it back up. And a lot of that's mut is because you put it, and the animal's in such a position where whatever you're putting in, it can still bring back up. That will be mutter. That's different than hamra. Now the Gemara continues quoting from our mission that says, Mahal kitin latarna girl, that we could force feed the chickens. And that is, but then we said that regarding the food of the chicken, that you can put the water into the bran, but then you can't be megabel, you can't need it. So the Gemara says, Abai said, Amritika me demar, I said this halacha in front of Rabbi Yosef, and I asked him, Masnitin mani, who is the Tana of our mission that says that you could put water into the bran? Because putting the water in is not the gibula, it's not considered kneading, it's just the actual kneading that's going to be a problem. So, Ba'amali, and he told me, Rabbi Yosef said, Rabbi Yosef Yehudi, the Tana, like learned in the Braisa of this machloikis. If one person puts in the flour, one puts the water into the flour, the last one is liable, that's the opinion of Rabbi. That is, for putting in the water, neither one is liable until he actually needs it. That's going to be the malach of lash of needing it, but just putting in water, that's not going to be the problem. And therefore, the Tana of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yisrael Yehuda, who holds that putting in the water is not a problem, but the needing is the problem. And that's the Gemara asks, Dilma adkan lekam Rabbi Yisrael Yehuda hasam, that maybe over there Rabbi Yisrael Yehuda said that you're not going to be chai for just putting in the water or the flour, is because, and that it's only until you are megavel and you actually knead it with your hand. Maybe because that case is elekemach, that's talking about flour, the bargibelhu, which that's something that it has the ability, it has the characteristic that it could be needed. Ava morsin, but regarding the case of our Mishnah, which talking about bran, the lav bargibelhu, which cannot be needed, it doesn't have the consistency to become like kneaded like a dough. Maybe I feel Rabbi Yehuda made the even, maybe even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that just putting in the water would be considered gibule, wouldn't be considered a kneading. And that he would agree over there to Rebbe that for that you would be chayiv, and it's only over there by the case of flour where it has the criteria that it actually could be needed, then you need that. But if it doesn't have that, then just putting the water would be. So how do you know that the town of our Mishnah is Rebbe Yisrael Yehuda? Maybe he would disagree on the town of our Mishnah and agree to Rebbe that it wouldn't be considered that you need to have gibul because it doesn't have the applicability of gibul by brand, and then you would be chayiv even just putting in the water. Nothing more says, he can't say that. It has to be that the Tana of a Mishnah is Rabbi Yisrael Yehuda. The Tana of a Mishnah, because it's explicit in the Braisa, like Rabbi Yisrael explained. The Braisa says, a nice in my mission, I'll put water into bran, which is the case of a Mishnah, the Rabbi. Rabbi Yisrael Yehuda, I'm nice in my mission, you'll have to put water into bran, and therefore we see that there is no difference, according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, whether it's something that's needable or not needable. Either way, you're not going to be chayiv until you actually need it, and that would be the Malach of Lash, and therefore, for example, by bran, if it's not, if you can't need it, it doesn't make a difference. You're not going to be chayav by just putting in the water. And that's where the Tana of our Mishnah says, which is Rabbi Yisrael Yehuda, that you're allowed to put the water into the bran, but you're not allowed to be megabel, you're not allowed to need it, make it into something that's needed. However, that's not like the opinion of a Rebbe who holds that even just putting in the water, you would be chayav for gibel, for the malacha of lash.